All right, so we're asking you to tweet at us some fun videos of what you're doing to keep yourself occupied around the house athletically. Hashtag rise and shine. And here's a fun one from More or Less 31. How about the no-look, behind-the-back, underhand, Eggo waffle toss, nothing but the bottom of the toaster? How about that? I don't care how many takes that took. I like it. And so keep tweeting those at us, if you will. Use the hashtag rise and shine. And I will mention that I've been talking to Frank Caliendo, who did that fun Bill Walton video for us a little bit earlier. And if you tweet those at us using the hashtag rise and shine and tell us what voice you'd like Frank Caliendo to narrate them in, he'll have a little fun with those as well. We're just trying to get through this thing together with you as sports fans, and we will. And we're here every single morning, and today we are really busy. It's time to get up with Dak and Dallas back at the table, but this time a lot more is at stake. We've got the latest on the big decision in Big D. Are they close to a deal? Then Las Vegas thinks there's a very good chance that we're in for a huge surprise on draft night. We'll show you where you have to go if you want to get to it. And on the anniversary of maybe the most important game ever, Magic Johnson joins us to talk about how he remembers it and what it means to him all these years later. All that and more in this hour of Get Up, which starts with this on the Cowboys, where it has been quite season. Last Monday, they agreed to a 5-year, $100 million deal with Amari Cooper. Josina Anderson reporting he got $60 million of that guaranteed. But that was the good news. The bad news, the Cowboys lose one of their top defenders as cornerback Byron Jones agrees to an $82 million deal with the Dolphins that makes him the highest paid corner in the league. So he's gone. Monday, 29-year-old center Travis Frederick, an incredibly important part of their offensive line, announced his retirement. He missed all of 2018 due to an autoimmune disease. He was a Pro Bowler last year. Then after placing the exclusive franchise tag on Dak Prescott, the Cowboys have now resumed contract negotiations with him. Remember, the two sides have till July 15th to work out a long-term deal. And it is our Ed Werders who is reporting that was. And let us bring Ed in live. First and foremost, it is good to see you, my friend. And let's get to this business here. What is the latest on the talks between Dallas and Dak?
Well, you know, Greeny, they've been at an impasse for a long time. This has been a priority for both the Cowboys and Dak Prescott to negotiate successfully a long-term deal to secure the quarterback. And more importantly, to know, for the Cowboys to know as they go through these latter stages of free agency where they tend to be more active, to know what his salary cap number is going to be. And that's a consequence right now of not having him under contract. The franchise tag being applied to the Cowboys cap right now is $26.8 million. They know it's going to be higher than that, but they don't know how much higher. That's a real impediment to them trying to, you know, sign free agent players, preparing for the upcoming draft. So I think it's really significant that for the first time since they franchise tagged Dak Prescott last week, and he's the only quarterback in their history that they've ever used this limitation on, that it's significant that they finally reached out and began negotiations again last night. The Cowboys apparently initiating that conversation and may be willing now to break the biggest part of the impasse, which is how long a contract is this going to be?
And so that's sort of the next question here. And I please forgive the frustration in my voice, but why is this taking so long? Is the years what's holding it up? What is it both sides want?
Yeah, I think it's length of contract. You know, Chris Mortensen reported last week for ESPN that Dak Prescott's side, Todd France's agent, they want a 4-year deal because they know there's going to be a new TV contract and a lot of new money coming into the NFL teams in the next 2 years, and that the salary cap's going to go up exponentially, and he wants to be able to take advantage of that when he finishes his next contract with the Cowboys. And the Cowboys have a history of preferring to do 5- and 6-year contracts so they can spread the salary cap signing bonus over a greater number of years, thereby lessening the impact in the early years of the deal. For example, you mentioned the Amari Cooper deal. Well, they signed Amari Cooper to a 5-year, $100 million contract. But this year, his number for the salary cap, Greeny, is only $12 million. Every other year, going forward, it's $22 million. And so they want to have the flexibility to do that same thing with Dak Prescott's contract.
All right, we'll see if they can figure this thing out. Edward, you stay safe, my friend, and it's great to see you. And we'll continue to come down there as this continues to develop. Meanwhile, I've got Marcus Spears with me this morning, and we are pleased to welcome in Louis Riddick, who'll be with us for this hour. And Louis, it is great to have you. And just as you listen to Ed talk there, again, with your history in front offices, how does this thing get done? Because, candidly, they need to move forward, and they need to get this thing worked out. How does this thing get worked out?
Yeah, it's a situation here where, quite honestly, unless Dak is willing to relent and he's willing to give them, you know, what they want and make some concessions as far as the number of years on the contract, look, he's the one who has leverage right now. And it's always about timing and leverage. And players, when they have the opportunity to exercise it, they're going to exercise it. He knows that Dallas right now is in between a rock and a hard place as far as trying to get this done. Because as Ed laid out, look, if they put him under, if they just kind of have to keep carrying him on the franchise tag, that absolutely just hamstrings them as far as their planning both this year and in subsequent years as far as signing players. So really it's going to be about how much money are they willing to boost up maybe his average hourly, I mean, his average yearly salary. Are they willing to boost, you know, the signing bonus? And then he will go ahead and add on another year in order to give them some salary cap relief in the short term. It's all going to be about give and take. And right now it doesn't sound like Dak, because of the fact that he knows that he has leverage and he has timing on his side and the situation is such that they need him there, it doesn't sound like he's willing to do that right now. So, I mean, the contract negotiations ultimately are always about both sides giving in and not necessarily getting everything that they want. So somebody walks away not getting everything. But right now, Dak doesn't seem like he's willing to do so. And that's why we are where we are.
Marcus, you're there in Dallas. You're a former Cowboy and you live there day in, day out. I just have a second here because I want to get to other things. In your mind, is there any way this doesn't get worked out, that he winds up playing this season on the franchise tag?
There, to me, there is no way this doesn't get worked out, because first of all, to Lou's point, like for future terms, what are you going to do if Dak plays a franchise tag this year and decides to walk or decides even not to sign this franchise tag with a new head coach? I think the Travis Frederick retirement puts even more pressure on this organization to get it done as well. Having Dak back there and obviously getting him into camp so Mike McCarthy and they can get this offense installed. There's a lot of outlying factors besides the contract. New things around Dallas. I'm being around here. Like, they're trying to recourse and get this football team into the playoffs and possibly win the Super Bowl. I.e. the hiring of Mike McCarthy, but also the signing of a lot of these guys. Look, Dontari Poe just signed. Obviously, you look at DeMarcus Lawrence and what they were able to do last year. Everybody talks about the Byron Jones moves. The Cowboys are not done in free agency either. So to Ed's point, to Lou's point, getting this done with Dak is a must. It's 100% must that they get this done if they're going to move forward in their plan of getting this done.
All right, I want to go to the next thing here, but we'll talk more about this as it continues to develop. I want to go to the draft stuff here. So Mel Kiper Jr., he's on with us the other day. He releases his mock draft 3.0, and he moves Tua Tagovailoa down, actually. He had him at number 3 to Detroit, understanding a trade being a big possibility. Tua releases this video, which everyone seems to be very impressed with, despite how short it is. And Mel moved him down to number 5 to Miami. And right now, at Caesars Sportsbook in Vegas, they see it as a dead heat right now between the Lions and the Dolphins as the favorites to land Tua Tagovailoa. Remember, Detroit picks at 3 and Miami picks at 5. And so this is where I've been looking forward to getting Louis Riddick on here. Again, using your experience in the front office, if you had made up your mind right now, you're a team, Louis, that has made up your mind, I want to get Tua Tagovailoa in this draft. Where do you feel you need to have to go in order to feel safe that you will get the guy you want?
Yeah, assuming that you really do believe that Detroit is really in play here at number 3, then you have to go to number 2. You have to get to the second overall spot. And you have to be dealing with Washington, because, look, Washington is not going to draft him. I just really don't see that happening, especially with the acquisition of Kyle Allen now to go along with Dwayne Haskins. And I think they have kind of rounded out their quarterback room. So I think if you really want to be sure, if you really do believe that Detroit is someone who could be a factor and you're Miami and you want him and you're dead set on him and you believe that video for what it is and you feel as though, look, we're willing to take the risk, the reward is greater than the risk, then I got to get to 2, and I've got to deal with the Washington Redskins and see if I can go ahead and secure that second overall spot. Otherwise, you're just going to be holding your breath when Detroit is on the clock. It's as simple as that.
Now, you've been doing the evaluations here, I know, as you sort of work our way towards the draft, which you'll be a huge part of, despite the fact that it won't be in Las Vegas. It'll still happen. What are you saying as you look at the tape? And I'd even like to get your quick take, if I could, on the video that he released the other day. Like, as you do the evaluation of Tua Tagovailoa, what do you see?
Look, I see. Look, he is a quintessential, just natural thrower of the football. And I've said this numerous different times. Look, if all things being equal, and we know that they aren't, but this is just for the sake of the evaluation, of a pure organic evaluation, he would be the number one overall pick for me had he had no injury history of the likes of which he does. He is just that natural as far as his decision-making in the pocket, his accuracy at all three levels of the field, his ability to throw on the move, his ability to really execute any kind of offense really that you need him to execute. Now, he's not going to be a Cam Newton-esque type of running threat, dual threat in that way, but as far as a thrower of the football who can absolutely put horsepower behind it and drill it in there or throw it with tremendous touch, okay, we know he had tremendous weapons at Alabama, but he is a fantastic, fantastic football player. And it's a shame that we're having to right now just discuss the fact that he is coming off of the kind of injury that he is. He has had the injury history that he does. And based off of, look, what we saw so far, although it's a very brief snippet as far as his rehab is concerned, you know, things are looking good, but that's the problem. I mean, that's why GMs right now, I think ideally Greeny would love to go ahead and push this draft back, because it really is, it's impossible. It's impossible to make an informed decision on someone like Tua, and you know, without having brought him into your facility and or him going back to Indianapolis for combine rechecks where the trainers can go look at him again. It's impossible. It's just flat out impossible. Teams are going to absolutely be rolling the dice when they pick someone like this, and that's unfair to them and unfair to him.
So what do you think, Swagger? What winds up happening here?
I think Miami, when we get to the draft, Miami trades up and they get Tua. Now, obviously, I think the trade is more about the Chargers. I just don't know where this narrative of Detroit getting rid of Matt Stafford comes from, unless when you get to the draft, they'll use Matt Stafford as some kind of opportunity to trade. But I don't see it. Matt Stafford was playing great last year. Now, if you're worried about injuries or something like that, Detroit is going to take Tua. But to me, Miami make the decision, move up. Miami built a lot of defense this free agency period. They brought in Shaq Lawson. They brought in Van Noy. They brought in Jones. Like, you see this team trending in that direction. You look at what Cincinnati did in free agency defensively, getting ready to build the team around who we believe Joe Burrow will be the first pick of the draft. So Miami, just to clear everything out, move up to number two, like Lou was saying, and take Tua. Because I just don't see if that's the guy that you identify, why wait? And you're sitting in Miami position with three first round draft picks.
And Miami has Ryan Fitzpatrick who can certainly hold it. Go ahead, Lewis, final thought.
No, I will say this. Look, if you're Washington and or Detroit, you love all the talk around surrounding your football team, especially if you're sitting there going, look, we're not taking Tua. But you want people to keep saying that. You want me to say it. You want Mel to say it. We want you to say it, because we want teams to panic and we want them to move up and you want to collect as many draft picks as possible. If I was Washington, look, I'd let these rumors just ride. Obviously, the trade for Kyle Allen kind of like dampened some of that enthusiasm, but I'd just let it ride. I'd let people keep talking, because I want them to come up there and try and get him. Give me all your draft picks, Ricky Williams style. Give them all to me.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting little ride as we're a month away from the first round of the draft. We, meanwhile, are just getting this hour started. As we continue, Cam Newton is no longer a Panther. The way it went down had Stephen A. all upset. Do teams owe star players anything when they decide to move on? That's the question. We'll have the answer. And then they played one of the most memorable games ever 41 years ago today. What does Magic Johnson remember about beating Larry Bird? He'll join us live to tell you as we get up with you on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Greeny and Lewis and Marcus getting up with you this morning, and let's look ahead to the NFL season. Forget week one, Lewis Reddick. Let's talk about week eight, middle of the season. Who will be the Raiders' starting quarterback?
Yeah, look, I still think it's going to be Derek Carr. And I know, you know, conventional wisdom says that maybe Marcus Mariota has a Ryan Tannehill type of scenario play itself out. But I still believe Derek Carr is going to be one of those people who's going to rise to the challenge here. There's a lot of speculation surrounding him, especially what Marcus is signing. But Derek is a great quarterback. I think he's someone who's going to rise to the challenge. He's someone who, John, you know, maybe looking for a replacement in the long term. But I still think he's going to be a guy who lasts the 2020 season as a starter in Oakland.
How about
Las Vegas?
It's right. Get used to that. New England, week eight. Who's the quarterback?
In New England, I still think it's going to be Jarrett Stidham. Look, this is a guy who I believe that Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick really do believe in. He's someone who they have put a lot of time into, someone who they believe at this point in his career. He's right where Jimmy Garoppolo was at on the comparable developmental stage. I think they will still maybe look to add a veteran or look to add some more competition, you know, to go along with Brian Hoyer, but I think he'll be the starter.
We'll talk more about him later. Meanwhile, Marcus, how about the Chargers, the L.A. Chargers? Who's their quarterback week eight?
Tyrod Taylor will still be the starting quarterback, and I believe Anthony Lynn has a lot of confidence in Tyrod Taylor. Obviously, he was in Cleveland, played well, suffered an injury. Baker Mayfield came in. This type of offense that they want to run, this is a quarterback that's very athletic. Tyrod Taylor will be the starter.
All right, and that means Cam Newton won't be. That's one of the places we've talked about him possibly going. We all understand all that he accomplished in Carolina. But now he's a free agent. And yesterday, Stephen A. Smith had some pretty strong comments about the way the Panthers moved on from him. Let's listen to Steve.
Carolina Panthers screwed over Cam Newton in terms of the timing in which they let him go. If you had let him go, you make this decision, you let him go weeks ago, then there would have been a plethora of teams available for him. But the fact that they waited this long to release him, they screwed him over. Nobody's mentioning that, so I will.
Really interesting. And Lewis Reddick, I want to start with you because of your unique position as having been a player and having been a member of a front office who has to make these kinds of decisions. Does a franchise owe anything to a player who has done as much for it as, for example, Cam Newton has for the Carolina Panthers?
Technically, no, they don't. It's business. It's nothing personal. And look, I get it from both sides, okay? Because as a player, I'd be ticked off. I could totally see where Stephen A. is coming from. And if I was Cam Newton, I'd feel the same way, especially given everything that I have done for your organization and everything I have sacrificed for your organization, everything I've tried to play through for the organization. But I can just tell you this, organizations look at it like this. Until we have the next best alternative in-house and under contract, or until we have an agreement with someone who we feel is a reasonable and sensible replacement, we're not going to do anything in the best interest of you. We're going to do everything to protect the club. And that sounds harsh and that sounds cold, but that's exactly what they did. Would it have been good for Cam had he been let go earlier, considering the fact that we all thought that this is where it was heading? Of course it would. Of course it'd be nice for them to be able to do that and afford him that kind of respect. But that's oftentimes not how this game works. It's not how this business works. And it stinks. It stinks for players in that regard. And it, you know, as an ex-player, again, that side of it really does bother me. But I understand how all NFL front offices work. I understand how the business is conducted. So we shouldn't be surprised by this.
What do you think, Marcus? Does the team owe him more than they gave him?
I thought they owed him to let him go as fast as possible. And obviously, gee, I tell you, man, when people in organizations come out, like Tepper came out and made the statement about Cam and his injury, that lets you know that he already knew Cam Newton would not be the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. And I get it if you're playing coy, but you look at the moves that they made. None of those, to me, would have been affected by you letting Cam go early. Teddy Bridgewater would have still been available in free agency for you to go out and get him if you would have released Cam. You traded away Kyle Allen, obviously, in that situation. Like, you knew what you wanted to do and what the plan was, and I get it. I understand what Lou is saying. You want to try to reserve, possibly, if you have a piece that you need to hold on to. But in this particular situation, you knew you were getting rid of Cam based on what your owner said. Obviously, Matt Rhule came out and said, I would love to coach Cam. You wanting to coach Cam doesn't have a damn thing to do with you wanting to keep Cam. And then you still decided to sign Teddy Bridgewater to a 3-year deal, which you would have been able to do anyway, like I said before. So I don't see any reason that they should have held on to Cam this long without him having an opportunity to go have a physical possibly before all of this stuff starts.
Marcus, I can give you a reason. There's another reason. There was a team in their division that didn't have a quarterback. And until they signed Tom Brady, the Buccaneers might have needed him. And I will take you back to 2008. The New York Jets signed Brett Favre during training camp, during the preseason. They decided to do the right thing by Chad Pennington, who had been their quarterback for a long time and had been a good soldier. So they immediately released him. He signed with the Dolphins in their division. He became the comeback player of the year that year and beat the Jets in the last game of the season to win the division and make the playoffs. Lewis, that's another consideration, right, wrong, or indifferent, that teams sure have to make when they make decisions like this.
Yeah, it is. It's a consideration, but still, you know, if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and you look at it, look, if Cam's on the market right now, you still can't bring him into your facility. You still can't really look at him with your own doctors in your place, in your environment. So still the risk, you're still taking on all the risk, although the reward could be tremendous and it could put one of your competitors in a very uncomfortable situation like you're talking about. So look, this is just business, man. I mean, that's what this is, and this is business in a very unique time for the NFL, and it's not good for Cam. I get it. I know it was all heading this way, but this is how front offices think, man. They are going to protect themselves first, and that is something that players have to accept, and it's not good, but that's just the way business is done a lot of times.
But I have to leave it there because Magic Johnson is waiting. 41 years ago today, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird played a game that started one of the greatest rivalries in the history of sports and launched March Madness as we know it. Today is the anniversary, and Magic will remember it as he joins us live next.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and today is the anniversary of maybe the most famous basketball game ever played. Magic Johnson versus Larry Bird for the 1979 NCAA championship. Here's a little bit of what it looked like.
Larry Bird, Urban, Magic Johnson.
Johnson, 3-on-1. Here it comes.
It remains to this day the highest rated basketball game ever played in the United States, college or pro. Over 40 million people watched Magic and Larry begin what we now know as March Madness in earnest. And we are delighted that Magic Johnson has a few minutes to join us this morning and remember it. Magic, good morning and thank you. And I would just ask you, as you think back now, all these years later, what are the things that come to your mind when you look back on that game?
Well, Greeny, I think, you know, the first thing is that Larry Bird led his team to a 33-0 season. And we struggled in the beginning in the Big Ten, but we came on strong at the end, and we won, I think, 10 straight games. And we really started playing well. We played our best ball during the NCAA tournament, lead into the NCAA tournament, I should say. And all year long, you know, it looked like this guy named Larry Bird was doing something special at Indiana State. You know, because both teams are from the Midwest, I'd heard about Larry Bird a lot and what he was doing at Indiana State, because most times at that time it was more regional coverage than it was national coverage. So we felt like, wow, we were watching this team and this player named Larry Bird play, and then we got hot, and all of a sudden they were upsetting and beating everybody in the NCAA tournament, and we were doing the same thing. And not too many times, Greeny, does the two best teams in college basketball meet for the championship and the two best players meet at the same time. So there was a build-up once the NCAA tournament started that I think TV, NBC, and all of them were hoping that Indiana State and Michigan State would meet for the championship game, and that's exactly what happened. And we were scared to death because the semifinals, we blew out Penn. But Larry Bird went off on DePaul, and I think he only missed like four shots in that game, and he scored almost, I think, 36 points or 38 points, something like that. And we were like, uh-oh, this dude is for real. What are we going to have to do to stop him? And we tried to contain him the best we could, and then we ended up winning the game. But we felt that two stars were better than one. We had a guy, Greg Kelser, was an incredible college basketball player, and we felt that was going to be the difference.
And indeed it was. I remember it. I can't believe it's 41 years. I remember it like it was yesterday. And so many people talk about how important that game turns out to be, the magnitude of it. And March Madness, as we know it now, really can be traced back to that day. Did you have any idea how big a deal this game was beyond yourselves as you were preparing to play it and playing in it?
No. No, we didn't have no idea it was going to be that big. We knew it was big because, again, Larry Bird was College Player of the Year, right? And I came in second. So, you got the two best players playing and the two best teams at that time because they beat everybody that was in front of them, and we did the same thing. And Notre Dame was a big team at that time, and we beat them. And they thought that Notre Dame had a chance to win the NCAA championship because people forget they had like five or six pros on that team led by Kelly Chipuka and Bill Laimbeer. But we took care of business. But I think we understood how big it got because they always featured, Bird versus Magic, Bird versus Magic. And neither one of us, I think, let the college basketball fans down because we both had great years that year. And at the end of the day, I've been linked to this guy forever. Ever since that game, I've been linked to Larry Bird. But I got to tell a story right quick, Greeny.
Yeah.
People don't realize one thing. Larry Bird and I had never sat on the bench ever in our lives. So during that year, we played for the World Invitational. We played in the World Invitational Tournament for the United States. And Joe B. Hall, the coach of the Kentucky Wildcats, was the coach. And he decided to start most of his Kentucky guys as well as Phil Ford. So Larry Bird and I sat on the bench. Can you believe that? We sat on the bench. That was the first time in history that both Larry and I sat on the bench. But when we got into the game, Greeny, we turned it out. And the fans went crazy, right? We would only be up 10 when we were sitting on the bench. When we came in, we went up 30, and we were throwing behind-the-back passes, no-look passes to each other. That's when I knew how special Larry Bird was, and I went back and told everybody, I just saw the greatest player. I don't care, black or white. This dude here could play some basketball.
You know, Magic, you and I have had many conversations about how your relationship with Larry evolved over the years. Because, again, it began that day and then in the NBA, and you met so many times. And I know how close a relationship you have today. Will you call him today and bust his chops about the fact that 41 years ago today, you guys won?
No, you know how mad Larry would get if I tried to do that.
What would he say?
You know, we're both still competitive people, so no, I won't rub it into him. Larry, he knows how special we needed each other, right? He brought out the best in me. I brought out the best in him. We changed March Madness, and then we changed the NBA as well. because at that time, my first championship, we were on tape delay. And thank God for the Boston Celtics and the Los Angeles Lakers, we changed the NBA Finals. The way it looks today, it was we were responsible for that, both Larry Bird and myself.
I don't think that anyone who knows the history of it would argue against that in any way. You know, I was going to ask you about the Lakers here, but in just the moment that I have left, I feel moved as we sit here during this unique time in American history. Just to ask your thoughts on how you're doing, how you're feeling, and the role that sports plays in everything. You, again, you began March Madness as we know it. Your rivalry with Larry Bird revolutionized American sports as we know it to this day. It's made the NBA what it is to this day. And I just wonder, as we all sit here and we miss sports together, just the thoughts that go through your mind today as you reminisce about all of that.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you and Get Up. I want to thank, you know, ESPN for giving us something to hang on to in these tough times. I want to tell people, please practice social distancing. Stay at home, because that's the only way that we're going to defeat this virus. I want to thank all the nurses and doctors out there in hospitals around the country. I want to thank all the grocery store workers who are still going to work each and every day and making sure that we have food. And, you know, when you think about first responders, we want to thank them. I think, you know, we have to stay together. We have to pray. We have to make sure that everybody in our family is safe and we're all doing the right thing. And sports is so important to our world. So normally, everybody looks forward to sports to get away from their everyday life, right? Mm. To get away from everything that's really their mortgage and their job and on and on and on. And right now we don't have that. So we need to really just stay together and keep our families safe, watch movies at home or whatever you want to do at home until we defeat it. And this has probably been the toughest thing that the world has ever had to go through, because right now we don't have sports to help us through our everyday life. And I hope that soon we can defeat this virus or contain it so we can get back to watching, you know, golf and the NBA. And I have enjoyed your show talking about football. I've learned more about football. Swagoo, all the guys, Dominique, all of them, Dan. So thank you for having your show and help us get through our everyday life, because it's been great that ESPN is, you guys are still working. And I just pray that everybody stay safe.
Magic, I think I speak for everybody when I say it makes us feel better to hear your voice. The best to you and your family. You stay safe, and we will see you as soon as we possibly can. Thank you so much for doing this.
As soon as this gets through, I'm coming on the show, all right?
All right, we look forward to it. Thank you very much, Magic.
God bless you.
Thank you for doing this. That's the great Magic Johnson with us. 41 years ago today, he played the most famous basketball game, and still to this day, the most watched basketball game in American history. We will be here for you all day long on ESPN. Coming up next, it's First Take. Then SportsCenter, continuing to break down the college basketball greatest player bracket. Followed by NFL Live. SportsCenter back again at 5, and then we cap it all with SportsCenter with SVP tonight, 11 o'clock Eastern. We are here with you to get through this together as sports fans on ESPN. Coming up, if you think Tom Brady doesn't have the arm to throw the ball deep anymore, his new coach would like a word. We'll talk about that and more next. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We're back on Get Up, and today was supposed to be opening day for all 30 Major League Baseball teams. Would have been the earliest ever league-wide opening day. Now the season won't begin till mid-May at the earliest. The commissioner was on with Scott Van Pelt last night with these thoughts.
Well, I think we need to have a regular season with a credible number of games. I think we should have a postseason format that focuses on providing the most possible entertaining product to our fans at a very, very difficult time in our history. And overall, I think our goal is to play as many baseball games as we possibly can, given the limitations associated with the public health concerns.
Commissioner, the idea that everything is on the table, that there's been an idea from within baseball, I believe from Toronto, floated about seven-inning doubleheaders, which takes us back to maybe Legion days or something like that. I mean, is this getting batted around? Is there any legs to something like that?
Well, we certainly have talked about the idea of using doubleheaders to maximize the number of games that we play. I think I have said publicly before that there's some numbers in baseball you can't change. Nine innings is one of them.
I'm with you.
When I said that, I wasn't thinking about this particular crisis. So, I'm sure it's something that will get some discussion.
Let's have some of that discussion right now. And my next guest last year as a rookie led the majors with 53 home runs, and he was named the Rookie of the Year for that. Pete Alonso of the Mets is with us here. And, Pete, thank you very much for taking the moment here. And
yeah, of course.
I just want to hear your reaction. You heard the commissioner there talking about how they will, whenever it is you guys were able to get back, try and get as many games in there to have as much of a representative regular season as possible. What do you think needs to be played this year for a regular season to feel meaningful?
Well, as much as possible. Right now we're in unprecedented times, and we just want to play. I mean, it's very unfortunate right now. I mean, we're not the only industry being affected by this. I mean, I was thinking about this today. It's like for us ball players, we should be going to the yard excited right now. And there's plenty of other people out there in all different versions of the workforce that should be going about their normal Thursday, and they're not. And for us and many other people in this country, we're not working, and it's interesting. It's a very unique and unprecedented time, and we just want to play. We hope that everything just kind of, we just hope this virus goes away as quick as possible, because for us, we'll take what we can get, because we don't know how long this thing's going to run. So we just want this thing to end as quickly and as efficiently as possible, because at the end of the day, the boys want to play.
Yeah, and so let's talk about the baseball piece of it. Obviously, what you're talking about is considerably more important than anything else, but we all are sports fans here, and so the idea of coming back and possibly adding a lot of doubleheaders to the schedule. We had Mark Teixeira on earlier, and he expressed a lot of concern about that, particularly for pitchers. How would you see that if they were to try to add, let's say for the sake of argument, two doubleheaders a week, every week, in order to get in as many games as possible? What would be your thought on that?
Well, it's nothing that we didn't do in the minors, because rain delays or rainouts, like we had to play 2 7-inning games to make that up, and then hop on a 9-hour bus ride somewhere to another town. So, I mean, that's nothing that none of the guys haven't done before, because all of us have had to go through the minor leagues and go through that grind. I'd much rather hop on a flight somewhere after a doubleheader in the big leagues than hop on a 10-hour bus ride in the minor leagues. So I'm not opposed to it, and we've done it before, and I don't see why we can't do that.
That's a really interesting perspective that you may have here, because the baseball players, you guys were in spring training, you were in the facilities, and they canceled everything. You were still in the facilities, and they closed the facilities. I'm just curious, what kinds of conversations are you having with your teammates and the other players around the sport during this, as you pointed out, unprecedented time?
We just want to stay as ready as possible, because let's say if the government gets everything under control sooner than normal, then we're going to have to play and go to either spring training or our home cities and get ready as quick as possible. Because for us, we just have to, I know we have to stay home and be good citizens and practice the social distancing. But for us, it's like, it's, we can't just work at home. For us, we don't have a desk job. So it's going to be really tough to stay active, stay in baseball shape during this quarantine time. So, guys are staying as active as possible. So it's an interesting dynamic, because once we get the go ahead or the green light from the government, we're going to want to play, but also we're going to need time, or we're going to want to have or be as ready as possible. So because again, like if we just hit the start button too early, guys could get hurt. But I think that there could be some ways to kind of get around that, regarding, whether it be expanded rosters or stuff of that nature, or adding a DH or something like that, to, because now there's a three batter minimum, and I feel like the DH would protect, health for a lot of the bullpen guys that have to face, live pitching when they haven't in their career, or they haven't had to, for the most part in their, for a long while. So, I mean, I think that there could be a lot of different ways where guys can, or like where both the teams and the players can find a middle ground and, find some way to find the best way possible to protect guys. And yeah, at the end of the day, no one wants players hurt, because that doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, so we will all see what adjustments are made there. Quickly, anyone who follows you on social media has seen you've sent a variety of really heartfelt and really lovely messages to the nurses and the doctors who are on the front lines of this battle. What has inspired you to do that, Pete?
I mean, those people are working around the clock. I can't imagine what, like the security people at the hospitals, the nurses, the doctors, I can't imagine what they're going through right now with the amount of influx of people, because what they're doing right now is, I think it's incredible work, and to keep everybody safe and to treat the people who are, infected or, who are showing symptoms, I think those people are doing such a phenomenal job, because I mean, I don't think we've seen anything like this since 1918. And it's crazy, how fast and rampant this disease has kind of infected and impacted the entire world. So, what they're doing right now to prevent it, I think here in the U.S., we're really lucky, because we have some of the best, medical staff in the entire world. So, I mean, if we're anywhere else, I feel lucky that, that we're here, because those people are really busting it. So kudos to them, and thank you. Not just for me, but I guess for all of us.
Pete, that's beautifully said. Thank you very much, my man, for doing this. We appreciate the time today. You stay well, and we will see you hopefully as soon as possible out there on the field. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Pete Alonso of the New York Mets, again, last year's Rookie of the Year. Coming up, First Take follows us here on ESPN Top of the Hour. Dak and the Cowboys are talking again. If he doesn't get a deal, should he hold out? They'll talk about that and more right after we wrap up. Get up. We hope you will get up with us tomorrow morning. We'll be here with LeBron weighing in on how the NBA should handle restarting its season. Plus, he was a legend on the court at Kentucky. Now he's a legend on Twitter. Rex Chapman will join me tomorrow morning. We'll be here to get up with you Friday, 8 Eastern on ESPN. Meanwhile, we'll finish it up here in just the moments we have left with Tom Brady on his way to Tampa Bay. Bruce Arians suggesting that anyone who thinks he can't throw the deep ball anymore is flat out wrong. And I haven't had Lewis Riddick on this show since this happened. And so, Lewis, I just want to get a quick moment from you. And what I mean by this happening is Tom Brady going to Tampa in the first place. I've not yet heard. How good will they be? How good in your mind do you think Tom and Tampa will be this coming season?
Yeah, look, I have a lot of faith in Bruce Arians and the staff he has put together. I know a lot of those guys personally, both on the coaching staff and in the front office. And look, Tom Brady's the consummate pro. He's someone who's set the standard for this league, you know, from a very, very young age, and he's someone who will continue to set the standard. There's a tremendous amount of risk involved with him going down there because of the fact that he's not going to be able to meet his teammates probably until training camp starts or when training camp starts. And he's someone who's been used to doing something one way for a long time. And I've been involved in these kind of situations. I've been involved in the 2011 lockout when in Philadelphia we signed multiple free agents and tried to put them all together in training camp. And it just doesn't work. So there, like, I think Tampa on paper will have the opportunity and have the ability to be a very formidable team. But I know how challenging this can be. And this is going to be no different for Tom and the Buccaneers overall. But it's going to be fun to watch. I know that they're going to give us content for days, man. We're going to be taking this team and absolutely picking it apart and putting it back together. But they've got a long road ahead of them because I know how challenging this kind of thing can be.
Yeah, so I agree with it. It's an interesting thing. We talk a lot about how the rookies will have to adapt to having much less time to work with everybody under these unusual circumstances. Now, Brady is the furthest thing you can be from a rookie, but it'll affect him too.
Most definitely, G. And you think about Tom Brady's career, he likes to bring his receivers in. He likes to get rapport with these guys even before team activity starts, as we've seen throughout the years, him working out with a bunch of guys in the offseason. So, yeah, to Lou's point, it's a different approach now, man, and it's more of an emphasis put on communication. And I'm sure these guys are on the phone talking about what they want to do, what they want to see. Maybe some conference calls going on and things like that to get going mentally. But until you can get out there on the field and get that time and see how Mike Evans and Chris Godwin likes to run routes and O.J. Howard and Brate and all of these guys that you'll be operating with in this, what we think will be a high-powered offense, is just a different approach for Tom Brady.
Finally, Lewis, do you have any idea what we who work on the show are going to have to deal with now? After Magic Johnson gave Marcus Spears that kind of a shout-out, do you know that Swagoo is going to be impossible to live with from this point forward, right, Swagoo?
Yeah. I can imagine. I know when he heard that, he was probably sitting there. I bet he had the biggest smile on his face. Yeah, Marcus, you know what? Just keep it down, though. Just keep it bearable. Keep us able to keep watching the show. You know what I mean?
Hey, everybody leave me the hell alone. Magic Johnson just said my name. Leave me the hell alone.
We are out of time. We got to go. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.